The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
You know, there used to be only two ways to meet for business, over the phone or in person. Now there's a better way. Use GoToMeeting to meet online. With GoToMeeting, everyone sees your computer desktop on their computer screen, so you get the best of both worlds. It's like meeting in person, but without wasting time and money traveling. And your conference calls will be more effective. The best part is that you can actually try it for free. That's right, GoToMeeting is free right now for 30 days. For this special offer, you must visit www.gotomeeting.com/podcasts. That's gotomeeting.com/podcasts for a free trial. And welcome to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. It's Andrew Horowitz. I am your host of this podcast, episode number 58. We have a special guest for you today. We're going to have an abbreviated session today because it's the Memorial Day abbreviated week. So I figured we can have a little bit of an abbreviated session today. Hopefully that doesn't disappoint many of you out there who have been faithful listeners and listening in. Thank you so much for your emails of late. Thank you so much for pushing us to number one in business last week. We were number one spot in iTunes business. And lots of things to talk to you about today before we get going into our discussion with, of course, Zachary Scheidt, who is going to bring us some interesting IPO discussions and new issues. And I also have a great guest. His name is Andrew Ross Sorkin. He's with the New York Times, and he writes the Deal Book column, all about deals and all about the happenings and things to do. I'm a very big fan of his, and I think you will be as well once you hear him. I'm going to give him a call in a few moments and discuss with him some of the deals that are pending, some of the things that are going to happen, maybe some of the things that aren't going to happen, and get his opinion on what he thinks of that. Let me give you some other piece of information I think would be useful for you. I think, first of all, if you haven't checked it out, go check out the Money Girl. Money Girl, yes, I am Money Girl, and no funny business about that. I am sitting in for them, my good friend Mignon Fogarty, who runs the entire Quick and Dirty Tips podcast series. Some great things there if you haven't listened in. Go check that out. There's some really, really good core, just real self-enrichment types of podcasts that she runs there. She is the host of the ever-famous Grammar Girl. If you want to learn about some of the tips on how to speak and write and how to really put it together, your words, that is, more effectively, go check out Grammar Girl. And I also wanted to talk about a few different sites that I think that would be kind of worthwhile for you to take a look at. And I have a list that I put together on the website on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. But there are some cool things that I think that you should be checking out, because right now in the markets the way they are, I think it bears in mind that you don't just want to be focused in on one thing and only reading or watching the same thing over and over. Get yourself some different opinions on the subject. Find out what other people are saying. You know, you listen to me, you maybe listen to a couple of different TV shows, you read a particular magazine or a particular newspaper. Change it up every once in a while. I mean, if you're reading, let's say, the Wall Street Journal every day, maybe pick up the Investor's Business Daily. If you're reading, let's say, Money Magazine, maybe pick up Fortune or pick up Business Week. And whatever it may be, if you're listening to CNBC, maybe change over to Fox or who else out there? Let's see, Bloomberg. You know, just every once in a while, switch it up to see if maybe either add something or to subtract something, to change up the opinion, see what's on the other side of the equation. Because I think that, you know, really helps us out a lot in our educational process and to understand that there isn't only one way to look at things. With that in mind, it reminds me of something that at the end of last year in, I guess it was December, we put together that special award called the BESPE Award for the blogs and education and podcasts and sites that are dedicated to education. You know what? You should check that out. I'll put a link there on our site. We have about, I don't know, 25 or 30 different websites that met some really high-level criteria that I felt was going to be the best place for you to find information in 2008. And you could use that, just bookmark that page and use it at, you know, whenever you want to find out, where can I find information on, let's say, options? Well, you just head over to Adams Options at blogspot.com. Or for example, I want to find out about economic issues. Well, my good friend Barry Ritholtz over at The Big Picture. You know, each of these has their own speciality, if you will, and really focuses in on certain areas. Go over to the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Again, I'll put a link there again for the BESPE Awards. You're going to find out just a ton of information there. Finally, before we get into this discussion, again, we're going to keep this a little bit short today. I want to remind you, because we got a lot of people, just two things. Number one, if you haven't filled out the listener survey, I would really appreciate going to the site. Please go over and just, it's, I don't know, 10 or 15 questions. Just tell us what you think, what you're looking for, what you want to hear, what you like, what you don't like. It's right on the site. Big box on the right-hand side says listener survey. Just go and click on it. The second thing is, I told you last week, we're taking indications of interest. If you are interested in us managing money for you, because so many people have, you know, said, hey, Andrew, you know, you're giving us this great advice. For example, hopefully you picked up GameStop short last week. We made 7 points last week on the recommendation for GameStop. We also came out short with Under Armour. Also, just I can go through the whole list for you, which I'm going to have for you. I think next week we'll have the entire list of every recommendation that was made on the blog that I recommended, either short or long, since the beginning about a year and a half ago, and tell you how it actually panned out. But so many people have written me, Andrew, can you manage our money? And I said, you know, for a while, let's hold off on it. But what we did now was, if you're interested in us managing your money, $50,000 minimum, go to the website. There's a little button that says indication of interest way on the bottom. Click that, fill out the quick surveys, maybe 4 or 5 questions, and we will then send you additional information and put you in the group that is interested. Again, it's only an indication of interest, and give you the information, tell you the qualifications. But a lot of people have done so. We're going to keep this going for another 2 or 3 weeks, and then we're going to open that fund up, close it out actually to new investors, open it up, and start investing and managing money if we do get enough people and the right amount of qualifications from people. So do that for yourselves if you want that to happen and if you want further information. Other than that, let's see what else do I have to tell you here. Down my list of things to do. Okay, the last thing that I want to mention is that every week I put together a list of the upcoming, the week in preview. I do it for AOL. I also write for MSN Money, so check that out. I'll put some links there. But on AOL, I write, on AOL Finance and Blocking Stocks, I write the week in preview. You know, like looking ahead, what's going to happen. So this week I wrote about kind of gifts for Father's Day. It's coming up, right? I try to pick a theme. I've had the theme of misery a couple of weeks ago, all sorts of stocks to short. Last week we hit, I think, 95% of the stocks short and long that I chose came in exactly as I predicted. That's pretty cool. It doesn't happen all the time. But I want you to go over there at AOL. We'll put a link in there also to find out what's happening this week. Gifts for Dad, Polo Ralph Lauren. Things like Dressbond, find out why I chose that for gifts for Dad, Sears, and just a whole host of other stocks that may do well or poorly this week, and I tell you why that is. So go over there and make sure you have all this together so that you can actually invest wisely for the week. Okay, well, I told you again, we're going to kind of get through some of that and then get right into this discussion with Andrew Ross Sorkin. Hopefully you picked up a copy of my book. It is available on audiobook right now. Afterwards, we'll come back. I'll tell you about that and where to get it. Stick around. We'll be right back with my friend Andrew Ross Sorkin from the New York Times on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. All right, as promised, we have a special guest today, Andrew Ross Sorkin, who writes for the New York Times, particularly amazing, great blog called The Deal Book, or at least the website called Deal Book by New York Times. And thanks so much for joining us, Mr. Sorkin.
Great to be here, Andrew.
So let's talk about the deals. I mean, the one on top of everybody's mind seems to be the, you know, the Yahoo, Microsoft, on, off, now being pushed, buttons being pushed by, you know, Icon. What's your take on this whole thing?
The problem is my take changes every day because I'm supposed to be a fair weather fan. But, you know, right now, it's really hard to judge what Steve Ballmer really wants. You know, it's hard to imagine he doesn't want this asset in Yahoo, and the fact that he's been lusting after it for now 3 years, and to turn around 2 weeks ago and say, you know what, if I can't get it for $33 a share, I don't want it at all, seems kind of silly. And then, of course, for them to turn around this week and say, you know what, we're actually now back at the negotiating table, but we actually are still sticking with the plan that we don't want to buy the whole thing. Now we only want to buy part of the thing, and if you understand what they're proposing, it's a very complicated structure where they're effectively saying, we're going to buy Yahoo's search business. Yahoo's the rest of Yahoo will continue on. We'll take a minority stake in that. But we're going to spin off, or Yahoo in this case would spin off its Asia business, which includes things like Alibaba.com. So It's very complicated, but the big issue is whether this latest move by Ballmer is more about blocking a Google transaction that Yahoo had been contemplating. Not to confuse the issue more, but Yahoo had been talking to Google about doing an advertising search partnership, and that's been under discussion. And frankly, we thought we'd see an announcement of that sometime this week, and it now looks like Microsoft stepped in to at least slow that down.
Well, now, everybody seems to think, if I may, you know, so many people are obviously talking about the whole, you know, this all about Google. Everything about this about Google. That's the theory, at least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and do you agree with that?
Oh, this is all about Google. Mm-hmm. For Microsoft, this is all about Google. But to finish the point on the other issue, what may very well be happening here is that they're trying to stall the Google issue because, you know, now we have a third player here. We have Carl Icahn coming mm-hmm. into the fray here mm-hmm. who's also saying, you know, Yahoo says you need to do a deal with Microsoft, a full-scale merger, a full-scale takeover. And what it may very well be is that they're trying to stall the Google situation to give Carl Icahn time to really put pressure on the board so that if, in fact, Microsoft still really wants to buy this thing, they can swoop in at the last minute and save the day. And that may very well be happening.
I read an interesting article that talks about how Icahn goes about doing what he does and you know, why he's so successful. And one of the things that he does is that he essentially will come in and, you know, find ways to pick apart the management and just make them look awful and embarrassed and, you know, kind of, you know, put them in a position that they have no choice but to cave in eventually. I don't know if you read that piece. It was in, I think, this weekend's journal or somewhere. It was somewhere interesting. But I was interested about that because, I mean, do you think, you know, these guys look pretty, after the egg toss yesterday, you know, these guys look kind of weak after what happened with, you know, Yang and Ballmer just going at it and then falling apart and kind of looking almost like from the outside that nobody knew what was going on. Do you think that this is going to be the case? Icahn's going to take that route?
Well, I think clearly Carl is going to take the route. Well, he's going to take the route that's going to make him win. And in this case, there's enough shareholders that are really against what Yahoo has done. I think everybody, not everybody, but most people would like to have seen them take a deal at $34, maybe $35, and possibly even $33. And I think what Carl does best is he may not understand the intricacies of the business. I mean, in this case, Carl Icahn doesn't have an email address, doesn't use a personal computer, so this is not the guy you necessarily want managing Yahoo, but he's got a great nose and really can smell blood in the water before anybody else and then is able to leverage that. And so does he make managements look bad? Yes, but at the same time, I think he takes managements that he recognizes already looks bad and takes advantage of that.
I think that's a great line. He smells blood in the water because clearly there is a measure of weakness here. You know, when it comes to this, I mean, and if in fact Google is the issue, particularly the ad revenue and the online and all that, I mean, obviously there's a lot of blood in the water on that side. And then, you know, we look at the ailing situation. I mean, what's your take on Yang, though? I mean, does Yang, you know, Yang seems to be just taking this personally, but to really throwing out the business side of the equation and being almost, you know, pigheaded.
Well, we'll see. We'll see, right? I think so far it appears pigheaded at some level, only in that they have resisted the takeover. The question is, do they get $34, $35 a share? If they do, maybe he'll look terrific in the end.
Right.
If he doesn't, he will look, as you said, pigheaded. So mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, it's all subjective and all based on what the eventual outcome is. I think there's a lot of people who are very, very frustrated with him, and I think from a process standpoint, in terms of him negotiating directly with Ballmer, there's a lot of problems with that. I think in a perfect world, you would have much preferred to see an independent committee of the board set up to actually work with Microsoft and negotiate this deal. In a situation like this, you don't want a founder of a company who clearly has his own bias about wanting to control the company and own the company and manage the company in there trying to negotiate a transaction.
Yeah, sure.
It's a bad idea.
Yep. Let's switch over to the area of financials. And I have a question about the Bank of America Countrywide deal. Bank of America came in when it seemed that they were saving the day and at least injecting about $2 billion in at the 18 level for the preferreds. Of course, you remember that.
Right.
And, you know, then the thing, you know, the Countrywide starts to continue to fall. And there's been discussion that they, hey, you know, maybe this isn't such a good idea. Maybe they don't want to take on their, you know, the problems of the ailing Countrywide. What's going on with all these deals that are seemingly starting to get much more fragile on the back end? You know, we have the announcements. Was it a case when Bank of America was like, listen, you know what? We know that the arm is dying, and we want to make sure that it doesn't, you know, really get in and the cancer doesn't spread through the whole body. And if we can make sure that Countrywide stays firm, well, it's going to help all of us out. Is that kind of what they did?
I think that's what they did. But I think the underlying issue you're really getting at is this concept of when is a commitment, mm-hmm. and when is a commitment really not a commitment? Because I think what we're seeing all across Wall Street, whether it's you know, questions about the future of this B of A Countrywide deal, or whether it's any of these other deals that seem to be falling apart in front of our eyes all the time. You know, you saw this buyout of Clear Channel seemingly fall apart, get renegotiated at the last minute. In the news this week, this deal in Bell Canada, the largest takeover in history at $51 or $52 billion, is now in peril. And why is this? It's because the banks and the buyers say, you know what, I signed this paper a couple months ago that said I was going to buy you at this price, but guess what? The world's changed, and I no longer want to buy you at this price. Mm. And I think that is a very interesting issue, both reputationally. Do you want to do business with these people again? So the next time that, you know, a buyer who just reneged on one deal comes into your board and says, I want to buy you, do you really want to sell to them? Because they may turn around and say, yeah, that price I agreed to, I really didn't agree to that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are what you're seeing. So I don't know what's going to end up happening with the Countrywide B of A deal. I actually happen to think it probably will go through. Now, does it go through at that price? I don't know. But I think that's what's happening. You're seeing people renegotiate the terms at the very last minute. It's like going to buy a house, putting down the deposit, saying, I'm in at this price, getting all the other buyers away, by the way. So now the seller has no advantage, right? I mean, because all the other buyers have left and are not interested, and then all of a sudden turning around saying, I'm not so interested anymore.
I suppose when you buy a house, obviously, you put some money down. That's what's going to be subject to the default, you know, if you don't go through with the deal. So I guess the play right now is, you know what, with all of these ailing companies, if things do snap up and do right, and then if you have some small amount, you know, put in the deal where you were required, it could be a no-brainer, just a quick, it's almost like an option.
Right,
you know,
and that's the way they've thought about it. I think that's the shift in mentality. It's that we haven't bought the company; we've bought an option on the company at a certain price. And if we can get it at a lower price, great.
Right.
And our LPs, our limited partners, all of these pension funds who've invested in us—this is private equity I'm talking about now—you know—will actually thank us. They will applaud us if we can actually get the price down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think there's lots of longer-term issues about how they can do business in the future and whether they're going to do business with some of the banks who are reneging and whether people are actually going to want to sell to these people in the future.
Right. So let's move on over to the area of kind of a way out, crazy, maybe totally ludicrous and a dream, but Netflix been struggling. It's come back. It's been struggling.
It comes back. Your favorite topic.
Apple, Netflix, maybe, possible, stupid. Lay it on me.
Oh, the Apple Netflix rumor that continues on, and now we're going to be propagating it probably by talking about it. Even. I'm not a believer, though. You know, I've been wrong before, and I'll tell you why I'm not a believer. Because at the end of the day, you're buying a legacy business in the infrastructure of what Netflix has built,
mm-hmm.
and to the extent that what Apple could, the only benefit that Apple would have is the subscription business, meaning.
Right.
Meaning adding all these people, layering them on top of their iTunes business already where they're trying to start downloading movies, et cetera, et cetera. But you end up buying this massive, not media company, you end up buying a massive logistics company that is still sending DVDs around the country and the world.
Although yesterday they announced that they have this new set-top box. Did you see that? Where you have instant access, which I don't, you know, that's kind of interesting. So,
oh, I think it's fascinating, but the only thing is Apple would probably tell you we have the same thing in ITV, and we have the same thing via iTunes.
Right.
And so the question is, you know, how much extra value do you get from having the Netflix subscriber base that you can migrate over to iTunes and to the ITV situation,
mm-hmm.
and be willing to take on all of these warehouses full of DVDs and mailing systems that's able to get you that CD that DVD, you know, overnight.
Right. The question
and
is,
I think that's a big business and
yeah,
not
huge.
A business in a digital world that Steve Jobs necessarily wants to be in.
Right. Now you're beginning to obviously get into a whole different genre where it's not, you know, even if they go to the idea of, I guess, segueing everybody to an online, you know, they take everybody and say, you know, DVDs are gone, we're moving this way. The question then becomes, and you know, besides the fact you only have maybe Blockbuster left in that business, which they're not doing very well with,
right.
You know, the question is, then, yeah, you're right, then they have these warehouses, and it's just, you know, Maybe an Amazon.
And Steve Jobs, by the way, has always seen around corners and in terms of being able to say, you know what, the future is this. Mm-hmm. The future is, remember, you know, he came out with the first computer that didn't have a disk drive in it. Because mm-hmm. he said, you know what, people aren't going to use disk drives in the future. I may be 2 or 3 years ahead of my time, but I'm willing to gamble that. Mm-hmm. He just came out with this, the new AirBook.
Yeah,
the new AirBook doesn't even have connections on it. It's all wireless.
Yeah.
That's probably 2 or 3 years ahead of its time. So
sure.
for him to take on a Netflix is to take on a business that's probably 2 or 3 years behind its time in some respects.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure he'd be so willing to do that.
All right. Well, that makes good sense.
We can come back and talk about this when he does.
Right. All right. Let's talk about the airlines. I mean, just an unmitigated disaster when it comes to, I guess, the deregulation problems, but then they kind of, things are looking good, but then just obviously getting just smashed right in the face with oil prices and fuel prices. And we're seeing, and I think I saw, if I'm not mistaken, there was some survey done recently about the recent consumer and passenger, their look at in terms of the customer service, and it was just at an all-out low. And I was on a plane recently, I think it was JetBlue, if I'm not mistaken, and after we landed, all of a sudden, the two guys come out of the pilot's cockpit, and they put on these blue gloves. And I said, I was right in front. I said, what are you doing?
And they're doing their own garbage.
They're doing their own garbage. And I said, oh, wait a minute. They said, yeah, we save something like $40 million a year by cleaning up our own garbage and all that. And I said, wait a minute. So you're the pilots, and now you've become the cabin cleanup crew. And I said, how do I know you're not the cabin cleanup crew that's really the pilots? I mean, what is going on? With this industry, and where are we going with this? Are we going back to, maybe a nationalized, and that seems another issue that's happening, is this kind of bringing everything back to a regulated, nationalized process is questionably, this next leg if none of these companies can, prosper and stay in business. I mean, what's going to go on with this business?
I don't think we're moving in that direction. I still think we're going to have a market-based system. But I do think that all these airlines are in trouble, and they're all in trouble because of high oil prices. That's what this is about, and I'm not sure you can merge your way to success.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the real fundamental issue. When Delta Northwest come out and they say they're going to merge themselves, what does that really get them? It gets them more routes. It may be able to rationalize some of the flights so they can actually put the right size airplane on the right size route and things of that sort. And you may be able to rationalize people, a nice way of saying firing people.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, they have said so far that at least for what are called customer-facing people, that they won't be doing that.
Well.
So it's very hard to understand where they're actually going to be saving the big dollars. You don't get a discount on oil if you buy it in bulk, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well,
so
you say
it doesn't help their cause in that respect.
Yeah, they do. They say one thing, do another. I wrote a piece called Milli Vanilli Government, Milli Vanilli Economics. It's sort of like, a lot of people doing a lot of lip syncing here, saying one thing really kind of another thing is happening. And not only in government, but in these deals. So I don't really know who I can believe these days. It seems one thing is said one day. I mean, look at the Bear Stearns situation. And then, whether they knew it or not, another thing is said the other day. All right, finally, a quick question. Who do you think, if you had to pick the one industry or maybe even a company that needs to be merged or needs to be consolidated, what would that be?
Oh, boy, you're putting me on the spot. A company that needs to be consolidated badly. Actually, I'll give you an easy answer.
Oh.
It's in the news today. It's Borders Bookstore Group.
Mm-hmm.
Borders, as you know, is I think has about a 10 or 11% market share, so it's not that big, struggling as a bookstore seller. And there's talk that Barnes & Noble is interested, and there's talk that others, like even Amazon, might be interested. Amazon, by the way, has a deal with them, so they manage their book sales online. That's a business that probably needs to be taken out of its misery somehow, one way or the other. In a business that remains highly fragmented. For all of the complaints that independent bookstores no longer exist anywhere in the world, Barnes & Noble, I think, only controls about 30% of the market. Borders has 40, and Borders has 10, bringing that to about 40 of sort of the big box kind of bookstore, and 60% really still are mom-and-pop shops. So that's an industry that I think...
Andrew, I got to tell you something. My book is out, The Disciplined Investor, and I got to tell you something. That, I say, people say, what's the oldest profession? Well, of course, prostitution, right? Well, no, it's not. It's books. books back to the Bible, right? You know, the first distribution of a book was back to the Bible, and they have not changed. Even Amazon, they have no, the rest of the crew has not changed their process in terms of distribution. You cannot contact people. They have made it uncustomer friendly or customer unfriendly, I should say. If you go to any of the websites, there is no way to get in touch with anybody. And from a author and, you know, the distribution process and all this, they make it extraordinarily difficult to do business with them. And it's just amazing. And I agree with you that that is the case. And back to the borders, the Amazon not only runs it, it's the Amazon site with just the Borders sticker on it, essentially.
Exactly.
Borders is trying to come through this really amazing, and they talk about Barnes & Noble. You know, you're going to go to the bookstore and you're going to have this unbelievable experience. They're going to change the book buying experience. What are they talking about? Well, how can you change a book buying experience? You know, right now people are just sitting there and reading their books for free and putting them back like they think it's a library to begin with, and then going to Amazon and buying it. And I agree, that is just a, you know, that business. But I don't know with Amazon, you know, Amazon looking at these guys, I don't know if they want a brick and mortar because they have that huge tax advantage.
Right.
You know, and that
And that's, you're absolutely right. And that's one reason I'm not sure Amazon will get in there. But you look at a business that should get taken out of misery and bought, and it's in the news today. So
I'll throw out, obviously, and also in the news is the office supply business. You know, I don't know if you've been to a Staples or an Office Depot lately, but it's, you blow a cannon through those stores. And it wouldn't affect anything, you know? There's nobody in there at all from what I've seen, at least. I don't know about you in New York, but down here in Florida, maybe nobody's doing business, but it's empty. So if you want to read some great, great information about deals, go to nytimes.com/dealbook to read Andrew Ross Sorkin's best information on a daily basis. And I got to tell you, no kidding aside, I'm a big fan. He has, you know, really, he has his ear to the ground, and he's the guy that if there's a deal coming, you're the guy that's going to tell us all about it. So I want to thank you for joining us. And
thank you for having me.
Keep up the great work.
Big fan of the show. Thanks.
Hey, appreciate it. Thanks. I'll talk to you soon. The Zach Zone with Zachary Scheidt. Zach is a portfolio manager at Stearman Capital and blogs at ZachStocks.com.
Well, hey, Andrew. We had a crazy week on Wall Street this past week as the market basically got stopped dead in its tracks, and it has begun to turn, and as the market begins to roll over, we're seeing the new issues market follow suit. If you remember, we had four deals, I think, on the calendar at the beginning of last week, and it turned out that there were eight deals that ended up getting done as some of these rapid offerings hit the market. The interesting thing is that there were eight secondary offerings priced. These are stocks that are already public that are coming to market to raise new capital. And so there were eight secondaries pricing and no IPOs. The one IPO that we had on the calendar got scratched. That's interesting to note because it basically means that there was not demand for this particular IPO, and so they couldn't get it done. The deals that stand out from this past week are really the shipping companies. Genco Shipping, GNK, and TBSI both came to market to raise capital. And Andrew, I know you've been on these stocks and you've been watching them, and you've expressed your concerns, and I think they were valid to a great degree. And that's why we saw Genco decline 11% from its offering, and TBSI was down 10%. Now, both of these declines bring the stocks to very important inflection points as they trade back and give back some of their gains, but they're still in an overall uptrend, and they need to hold support right here. If they don't, then we've got some serious issues on our hands. Looking at the way the week ended, we were running into a long three-day weekend. We've got Memorial Day weekend right now, and so as you look at traders that are positioning themselves and getting their books in order ahead of a three-day weekend, you can usually see what the sentiment is on Wall Street. And it's not uncommon to see stocks get marked up pretty strongly on a Friday afternoon ahead of a three-day weekend as investors are afraid to go home without plenty of exposure on their books because they assume that the market's going to continue to do well. And if they don't have everything bought that they want to get bought before the weekend, then Tuesday is going to roll around and the market's going to gap higher and they're going to be left sitting in the dust. And so the sentiment in a bull market is to go ahead and buy as much as you can on that Friday afternoon. We did not see that this past Friday at all. In fact, we saw quite the opposite. Nobody was willing to go home with exposure on their books. Everybody wanted to have a defensive position And this is a new phenomenon, so I wouldn't try to fade this type of a move. I think it's interesting to note that the institutions are saying, hey, wait a second, you know, we need to have risk control in place. And that's true about the overall markets, but it's magnified in the new issues market. As these new issues came to market, as new stock was sold to the public, investors dumped these shares as fast as they could. Hughes Communication was another one that was down 8% from the offering price. And so it's as we head into that three-day weekend, that tells you some key points about how overall traders are looking at this market. Another interesting point is that we're sitting on a lack of deals coming out. We've got one IPO on the calendar for next week. It's called Safe Bulkers Inc., and this is another shipping company. Merrill Lynch and Credit Suisse are leading the pack on the underwriting side. And the fact that companies realize that they can't raise capital in this type of environment, and they've pulled these deals. The IPO didn't get done last week. There's only one on the calendar for this coming week. That begins to tell you that that people are recognizing a lack of liquidity, and we could see more pain in the overall market. Next week is the key inflection point as far as the market's concerned. You need to watch things very closely. If the market fails to rebound and no new issues are brought to market, it's pretty likely that we're going to see another leg lower for the overall markets. And if that happens, we can short some of these deal names, some of these new IPOs, some of these companies that have brought secondaries. And man, we can make a ton of money on the short side while everybody else is feeling pain. However, if the market recovers next week, then it probably means that we've still got a little bit of room to go, and we'll probably see some more IPOs price, and there'll be opportunity on the long side. But right now, you kind of have to hold your horses and see which way this worm is going to turn. As we look at the following week and the week after that, and really this next upcoming month, I think it's real important to stay on top of the market. One of the ways to do that is to watch Andrew's the TDI blog, the Disciplined Investor blog. There's plenty of good information for long-term and short-term investing, and you definitely have to stay on top of that. Also, you could pay me a visit at zachstocks.com, zachstocks.com. I'll be letting you know what's going on in the new issue markets and where I see opportunity both long and short in these relatively young names. And then finally, I will be checking in with you guys next week from sunny Sea Island, Georgia. I'll be taking some equipment down there, but hopefully the audio is up to par. And I'll be watching the markets down there and hope that you're able to do something fun this summer. And we will touch base next week. Thanks, Andrew.
Hey, Zach. Thanks so much. And for any other information about Zach, go to zachstocks.com. We'll also have a link on our website on thedisciplinedinvestor.com in today's show notes. For those of you that always want to find out what is more about what we're talking about, make sure to go to the show notes. Simply just go to disciplinedinvestor.com and click on the button that says the episode. This is episode 58, so just click on that, and you'll find out all the information. We're going to wrap it up with that, and I want to mention to you once again that two things. Number one, you want the audiobook? We've been waiting so long. Finally, Audible has it. Go to audible.com, type in my name, Andrew Horowitz. We'll also put a link on the site for that. But if you want to go right to Audible, type in my name, and you'll see the audiobook show up. Hopefully, by now, they changed the cover. They have the wrong cover on there, but we're going to change that. And if you can find out what's wrong with that cover, let me know, and we'll have the new one up shortly. It's also available on iTunes. And you could just download it, listen to you on your iPod or on your iPhone or whatever it may be. If you want to hear the Disciplined Investor Essential Strategies for Success, I'm telling you, you'll find out some great ways to find out how to profit in up and down markets. And finally, as a reminder, if you want to get in on the indication of interest, go over to the website and click on way on the bottom, way down on the bottom to the right. There's a little hidden button that says indication of interest. Fill that out. Send it on over. We'll get you more information on that special fund that we're setting up for investing the Disciplined Investor way. If you want to be a disciplined investor, hey, you've tuned into the right place. I want you to be a disciplined investor because the markets, I've been telling you for a while, they stink. The fundamentals are horrible. The technicals are horrible. And I got to tell you, I don't care how many deals are out there, how many IPOs are out there, what they're saying about there being no inflation, there is inflation, what they're telling you about the job market, the good job market. It is a lousy situation. And if I sound negative, again, I apologize. But we can profit from this. We've been doing so. Check it out. Do yourself a favor. Stay the course. Be disciplined. Now more than ever is the time. Again, we're going to cut it short this week. If you have anything to ask me, send it over to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And we have truly some amazing guests lined up. And I'm going to let you be surprised. Wait till you hear what we have coming up next week in the next 4 or 5 weeks on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for subscribing. We'll see you real soon. Next week, same time, same channel. The Disciplined Investor Podcast. Be well.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.